This is Clusterfucked. Here's your host, Roger King.
Welcome to Clusterfucked. I am Roger King. So in our very first episode, I gave the overview of this potential new liberal movement where liberal voters might actually move to certain key red states, particularly the ones with lower populations. And a specific example I gave were some numbers from the 2016 election related to Denver, Colorado, and how nearby Wyoming's biggest city, Cheyenne, is 90 minutes away. So I talked a little bit about Wyoming and its low population numbers and proximity to a blue state like Colorado, and how if a certain chunk of the excess liberal voters in Denver simply moved 90 minutes away to Wyoming, maybe the red state of Wyoming could be flipped blue. So today's guest is a guy who knows Wyoming very well. He's the executive director of the Democratic Party of Wyoming, and he also held that interim role previously in another low population red state, that being Idaho. So here's Dean Ferguson. Dean, welcome to Clusterfucked.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to a nice conversation.
Great. As I mentioned in the first episode, I was talking about the low population numbers of Wyoming and, you know, in theory, the potential to flip the state blue with some incremental population changes. But before we get into the idea of people moving to Wyoming potentially, let's just get a general sense of the numbers without going too deep into the weeds here. So the population of the entire state is, 500,000 or?
Yeah, it's just like 580,000, right around there.
And what percentage actually came out to vote, say, in the last presidential election?
I think our voters, we tend to have about 200,000 voters.
And what percentage of the eligible, so 200,000 voted, how many could have if everyone eligible had actually voted?
I think it's closer to a few hundred thousand and over that number.
Well, in percentage numbers, you see the Republican presidential candidate, winning 65% of the vote or something. But, and so you look at the percentage and you go, man, this state is out of reach. But we're not talking about large numbers here, actually, of people. There are obviously two ways to increase, vote totals for a party. You can get more of your people out to vote, some of the folks who stayed home for whatever reason. And you can obviously get people to switch party allegiance and vote for your side. So, starting with the first one, do you think there's room for improvement in just getting out the vote in Wyoming among liberals or Democrats, people who lean that way? They could do a better job just on the get out the vote of your side.
Yeah, no question about it. It's actually a little difficult to gauge exactly what our turnout is, because if you don't vote in an election, your name gets purged, right? And so by the next election, we've had elections where just everybody voted because everybody who didn't vote last time had their name purged. That's a tough statistic to get down and figure out exactly what the turnout is. But the truth is that a good get-out-the-vote program will add, 5-10% turnout no matter what. And so, yes, we've got room to have better turnout. To your other question about how many voters it'll take to win, you mentioned that we're north of Denver. We're about 100 miles north of Denver and here in Cheyenne. The Denver's mayor's race has a win number around 100,000, and that's our statewide win number for a U.S. Senate race here in Wyoming. Less than 100,000 votes, we get a Democratic U.S. senator.
Well, that plays right into, the kind of the theme of this podcast. I mean, I look at, a state like Texas, for example, and we've been hearing for a long time, one of these cycles, Texas is going to turn blue. The Hispanic population is increasing and all the rest, and Austin and other places are becoming, more and more liberal. But you think Texas is the second largest state in the country. We're talking millions and millions of voters, obviously expensive media markets, Dallas, Houston and all that. And, at the presidential level, the Republican candidate who wins Texas usually wins by more than a million votes. So I look at all of that and say the amount of energy and money and grassroots activity and all of that energy that would take to turn a state like Texas blue, it seems to me, when I look at population numbers and what you were just talking about with Wyoming and the 100,000, it seems like it would take less money and less effort to flip a state like Wyoming blue. Am I way off on that?
You're not way off on that. The fact is we can run a competitive, successful race here for $1 million for a federal office. It doesn't take that much of an investment, and you can talk to each one of those people individually, you know. And, you know, particularly when you talk about the U.S. Senate, right? You said, I think I already mentioned this, but like down south in Denver, the win number there for their mayor's race is 100,000.
And just clarify, when you say win number, what does that means?
That's how many votes the candidate needs to get his 50% plus one,
right,
to win in the fall.
Yeah, so that's it, 100,000, and you can win a Senate race in Wyoming. And as we all know, Wyoming, with its, as you said, you know, less than 600,000 people, have two senators, just like California with their 35 million people. So again, it comes back to this idea that, you know, with a bit of money and energy and, you know, grassroots stuff, it seems to me the votes are there for the Democrats to flip some seats.
Oh yeah, no, we're really feeling a lot of energy. You know, the same energy that's buoying progressives, Democrats, you know, people who want to see a better world. You know, that's real, and that hits every state, right? I mean, people have a tendency to treat us a little bit like a flyover. But we've been seeing signs here in Wyoming and throughout the West of that same Women's March enthusiasm. And so, I mean, the trick for us is, you know, how do we, with our limited resources, take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves? And, you know, that's been the tactical issue for us for the last, ever since the Women's March, the day after the inauguration, you know.
And, right. Well, I mean, you know,
we're like, how do we take advantage of that in Wyoming? And we're doing it.
Well, that's great. I mean, and I was thinking earlier, 10 years ago when Obama was running for the nomination, 2008.
Yeah.
His campaign had a strategy. David Plouffe, I think, was the man instituting this, realizing, now this was just the Democratic primaries, of course, but he was realizing there was a bit more bang for the buck and a potential to really kind of run up the numbers in the states that a lot of other candidates and campaigns ignored. So Obama went out to, I know we went to Idaho, to Boise, and I'm not sure if he went to Wyoming, but you might have been in Idaho at the time, drew a huge crowd. And of course, you know, basically won the nomination by doing this rather than fighting Hillary Clinton for a couple of extra delegates in New Jersey or something. He came out to some of the smaller states that we're talking about. Were you working for the party at the time in Idaho when he was there?
Actually, at the time in Idaho when he was there, I was still a newspaper reporter. I was a political reporter.
Mm.
And so I went to, he stopped in Boise, Taco Bell Arena. And I mean, it was crazy. It was like a rock concert, you know, where just the crowd was on their feet. Difference being that people had these emotional tears, which was really something to watch.
Right.
And that was early enough in Obama's primary race that later, talking to his campaign manager, he'd said that, you know, and of course this is the kind of thing that, you know, people say to make everybody feel good, but that Obama was so surprised at the big turnout and enthusiastic turnout in Boise that he turned to the car and said to his staff, he's going, you know, I think we can win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about that is nobody in Boise was expecting this guy to, or I should say in Idaho, was really expecting this guy, you know, Barack Obama, to really, really light things on fire. But the second he did, everybody was really impressed with him. And he energized a lot of young people to turn out, a lot of people who just hadn't been engaged before to turn out and get involved in politics that year. And it was really quite it was a good moment for Democrats in Idaho and in the country. And I guess the point being, you know, these waves, these trends, these feelings of, you know, bringing the nation together, you know, they don't they don't just fly over and happen on the coast, right? I mean,
right.
They happen out west too.
Well, and that's kind of what I'm getting at in terms of bringing some attention from some of the national figures in the party. They can generate and kind of build off that enthusiasm you were talking about with the grassroots stuff. And in a year like this, obviously, the energy is high on the Democratic side. But on a more general level, because on the podcast, I'm frequently discussing the two types of clustering, the literal clustering I sort of talked about off the top of where people choose to live, but the figurative clustering, the only talking to people who already agree with us. And, I feel Democrats need to do a better job of making our case to voters who are, not already in our camp. So I, in a state like Wyoming, which, people naturally assume is quite conservative and rural, what are typical Democratic issues where you feel the party could get some traction with voters that are not already with the Democrats?
So we have a number of areas of alignment that cut across, partisanship. One of the probably most activating ones has to do with public lands ownership. Mm-hmm. You think of the West, you think of wide open vistas and wildlife and room to roam. And when people out west think of that too, and there's a effort afoot to take these publicly owned lands, turn them over to the state, or just outright try to sell them to folks who can afford them. And this is a super unpopular idea, and the right wing fringe of the Republican Party endorses this idea. They're absolutely tone deaf to the fact that people do not want to see their public lands turned over to folks who will put up no trespassing signs. This is a really unifying issue for us. It reminds hunters and anglers that Democrats are people that support those endeavors. We want people out hunting and fishing, and it reminds them that we're bigger supporters of that because we want them to have a place to do those things.
Right.
And that's been a really good issue for us. Then, of course, it's, people are very, very interested in health care. We have seen decline in, I think, the affordability or the accessibility in rural hospitals because of the erosion of Affordable Care Act and, of course, education as well. Wyoming actually, in a lot of ways, performs really well when it comes to public education, but it is a constant battle in this state to keep Republicans from defunding it. And they've continued to defund it. Over the last couple of years, they took $110 million out of our state budget away from public education, and that's actually a large chunk for Wyoming.
Right. Well, on the healthcare, is Obamacare to the point where it's relatively popular in Wyoming, or not quite yet?
Honestly, the term Obamacare doesn't show up a lot in discussions.
Right, I noticed you called it the Affordable Care Act.
Right, so I'm putting my brain together here, going, okay, where have I seen all these disparate terms for it?
Yeah,
and pull that together. But what I'm seeing is, it is more popular. That's the trend. People have come to understand that, healthcare is a good thing.
Right.
And being able to afford it, even better. So the attacks on the Affordable Care Act, on Obamacare, on just some kind of, concerted, smart effort to make healthcare affordable and accessible is really painful for the regular Wyomingite, and people notice it. That said, our legislature, which is a weird kind of dynamic, is super Republican, and when I say super, I mean super majority.
Right.
They won't even take the $100,000 that they could have taken to expand Medicaid, and that's ironically how much they felt like they had to cut from the budget to take away from public education. So that disconnect resonates out there, and people feel it, and it all adds up to this mosaic of the issues slanting away from Republicans.
I was just going to mention Idaho briefly. We've got a few minutes. I think in a quick email exchange, you had mentioned something about the Republicans actually doing a bit of a similar thing that I'm talking about on the podcast of getting people to move there. And you said, you know, in small numbers, you can actually change the voting results of certainly at the local level. How did they do that in Idaho? And could the Democrats replicate something like that?
It's numbers over time. But there is a movement called the Redoubt Movement. It's probably, you know, a fringe movement. You can find it online. Just Google it. And what it is basically separatists who are trying to carve out a corner of the country where they can dig in and prepare for the end times.
Mm.
And their thing is,
as you do,
it's going to be the United Nations going to take over, and but by golly, they're going to be there with their neighbors and they'll resist.
But this worked enough to get people out there.
Oh, my gosh. And it secretly worked. It quietly worked. People came in over the last decade to where now you've got a portion of, and their redoubt area, which is a kind of fortress that they envision, is eastern Washington, northern Idaho, and western Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And they just think that's a good place to go hang out, and they're sure they're going to find people that are just like them
right there
and et cetera, et cetera. Well, they've shown up there in enough numbers, and they are so active that, they've turned out and supported local candidates, and they've got some legislators that are sympathetic towards their movement. Now, they don't mesh well with the locals, and I mean, establishment Republicans with Democrats, independents.
Right.
That said, Republicans have been so, I don't know what the word is for it. They've been really slow to react to the radicalism in their party.
Right, because they're voting the right way. They're not going to get down in the bunkers with these folks, if they're going to show up
right.
and vote Republican, yeah, they'll tolerate
right.
it.
And so for years, they're like, oh, yeah, that's fine. These guys are helping us get over the, these guys are knocking on doors for us. These guys are helping us beat the Democrats.
Right.
And so they used them that way for years. And now they're at the point that there's too many of them,
right.
And they really are taking over the Republican Party, and back in crazy stuff too. Like I don't know if the Republican Party in Idaho still has in their platform a return to the gold standard. They want to take away the right to popularly elect U.S. senators and have the legislature do that instead.
Oh, no, not right at the time when we're getting the liberals to start moving. We can't have that. It's sort of a catch-22 at the national level. They always want to see some evidence that a race is competitive, and then you get the money and all that sort of stuff. But in a year like this, I would think, it's good news, as you say, that, you know, first of all, 100,000 is the number, which doesn't seem insurmountable. And, you feel that there is a liberal voting population that is there already, and another group of voters who can be persuadable.
Yep. Are looking for reasons to inject some sanity and responsibility and some checks and balance. This is happening right now, and we're positioning ourselves to take advantage of it. And in terms of, you know, national Democratic politics, paying attention to our state or other states, they really have done grew the amount of financial support that they give to every state. Monthly, and that's a really kind of key to us to be able to hire a staff person who can manage our database,
mm-hmm.
for instance. Without that support, we can't afford that basic level of service. And so I just want to mention that the DNC is doing a good job supporting states in that regard.
I know there's been some criticism of them in the past.
Never say they couldn't do more.
Right. Of course. It's not like you're saying we don't need any more money.
Right.
Yeah, no one's going to take that from this podcast. It sounds encouraging, and it sounds to me like if people are somehow, you know, they're reaching out to fellow Wyoming voters or people from other states and trying to persuade. It sounds like the issues of, as you mentioned, the environment and protecting public lands and health care and some of the other kitchen table stuff are really the key in persuading these voters to come over to the Democratic side.
Oh, no question about it. And it's just being able to get out there and be heard, to get your voice heard above the din. And that does mean buying your way into communications channels. And by that, you know, it's just, if it's being able to afford an ad in a newspaper, then you need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another component here to what's, in my analysis, has happened to the West, Western Democratic parties, is that, so as Democratic parties struggled and lost support over and over, they actually reached a point where if you go through an election cycle and you don't win, you know, there's like, oh my gosh, you guys failed. We're gonna fire all the staff. We're gonna get rid of the officers and we're gonna start from scratch. And that is like no way to build an organization that can support candidates. And so that's a vision that people have come to understand or are beginning to understand, that when we talk about winning, you know, we're talking about improving our position in the legislature, for instance, by 4 or 5 legislative seats. Since we have 12,
right,
that is a huge percentage increase, but that still doesn't make it, that doesn't get us very close to 50%. But that's a huge win, right?
Yeah, it's like a baseball team. They lose a season. You don't, you know, cut the entire pitching staff. You add some pieces and until you know, and it's incremental progress. And but again, with the, you know, with the numbers we're talking about, it doesn't take that much to make these changes.
No, and we're talking about communities. Some communities in Wyoming, really important, you know, communities that have a voice, you know, have fewer than 50 people in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
The towns around here are 50 miles apart, and some of them don't have a whole lot of people living there. And, you know, that's our Wyoming community is, you know, these are influential places, and if you show up at their Chamber of Commerce meeting and you talk to them and you persuade them, you just got the whole town, so...
Yeah, that's the plus of a small place. Yeah. Well, we've run out of time, but I appreciate you joining us, Dean. And, you know, we may check in with you again. Thanks for being an honorable clusterfucker.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Dean, we'll talk to you soon.
Yep, bye-bye.
So that's Dean Ferguson, executive director of the Democratic Party of Wyoming. Two interesting facts there among many. That he can run a competitive Senate race in Wyoming for only $1 million, and that to win such a Senate race, you would only need a little over 100,000 votes. So let's think seriously about this new liberal movement. That wraps up another fine episode of Clusterfucked. To find out more about Clusterfucked, and of course, listen to other episodes, the place to go is cfthepodcast.com. That's cfthepodcast.com. And at that site, there is an opportunity to support this podcast. I've said this before, it's a labor of love. I don't have any big financial backer or major advertiser. It's just me, but I do have expenses. We're recording in a fine studio, dbaudio.ca, and we've got website hosting and design and some marketing stuff, and we want to get the word out there. So if you enjoy what you hear and you'd like to support us, we would appreciate it. There's a little button there at the website, cfthepodcast.com. Just click support and give what you think is appropriate. I also encourage you to join the mailing list so we can update you on new episodes. We will not bombard you, I promise. Just episode notifications, nothing else. Certainly no advertising or anything else nefarious in your inbox. Only official communication from CF headquarters. Again, thanks for taking the time to listen.
The Clusterfucked Podcast, a liberal host with red state guests.
I'm Roger King. That'll be all.